This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning to you. Where does this lovely radio show find you this Sunday morning?
This Sunday, I'm in New York City.
What are you doing there?
Enjoying the warm, fall-like weather in New York. It's been in the 90s here for a few days. And I've been getting my fill of food, Broadway shows, sports. It's good to spend a little bit of time in the big city.
And that's great, because when you're in New York, it puts you in a different frame of mind. Everything around you is theater, is music, is entertainment. So perfect for our guest this week.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you're a co-host on one of your radio shows on Alt 101.5, Kalen Allen, who's got a very burgeoning career in music and in as a social media influencer and as a retro clothing entrepreneur. She's got a lot of fires going, but she's heading off to London to finish a record album with Niall Marr, and you know about that, who Niall is, and you can share that with our audience.
Yep. So Kayla and I worked together for like 3 years on our radio show for Alt, which was now Alt 95.7. And right. She went to the UK last November, and she has an amazing story on how she hooked up with Niall Marr, who is the son of the guitarist for the Smiths, Johnny Marr. And he's a real talented musician, Niall is. And the story about how he found Kaylin is one for the ages. So she'll tell that. But they're starting a new band, and the name of the band is Share, S-H-A-R-E.
She's had a number of interesting bands. She was with Kississippi, right?
Yep.
And then she performed as Wilma Laverne Minor, as well as Kalen Allen. So I want to find out about all of these incarnations of her as well, and how that all fits together with this new metamorphosis into Share with Niall Marr.
I'm with you, Arnie. I think it'll be a great conversation. When we come back, our guest will be Kalen Allen Krebsbach. Back after this. All right, Arnie, we are back with our guest, Kalen Krebsbach.
Hello.
Kalen, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
You know, this shows the global nature of Missoula Radio, right? You're in Manchester, the UK. I'm in New York, and Scott's in his office in Missoula, right?
Well, she's still in Missoula, Arnie.
I'm technically still in Missoula until the 24th, but that is where I'm heading.
So you're heading to Manchester. So, Kalen, you've had a very interesting career. We alluded to it a little bit earlier. You've been doing music. You've been part of Kississippi, and then I want to ask you specifically how you came up with Wilma Laverne Minor. That's a very interesting name. It's very reminiscent to me. When I saw that name, it reminded me way back in the 60s, Rod Stewart, for a short time, played with an Australian band called Python Lee Jackson.
Python Lee Jackson.
Wilma Laverne Minor just reminded me of a band like, Python Lee Jackson. He did, right. I think, a couple of studio songs with that.
So well, Wilma Laverne Minor. Oh, sorry. Wilma Laverne Minor is my, it's my paternal grandmother's maiden name.
That's a great name.
I needed a band name, and I had one time I had remarked to my dad, like, he had told me her full name, and he had said, he told me her name was Wilma Laverne Minor, and I was like, oh, that would be a good band name. And then like 3 years later, I needed a band name and I couldn't think of one. And he was like, well, what about grandma's maiden name? And I was like, oh,
it's okay. Like, perfect. It's a really cool name. And I know like your vintage clothing company was called Stone Pony. Was that based on the Linda Ronstadt group of the 60s?
It was. Yeah. It was just the same thing. I was like, I need a name. And I always liked how it was spelled with an E-Y.
Right.
It always seemed silly and
fun. They had the one great song,
Different Drum. Excellent song. Love Linda Ronstadt. I recently watched that episode of that TV show, The Last of Us.
Right.
That features... Love You for a Long Time. I can't remember
exactly. And she also had that great single with Aaron Neville.
Right.
You
Yeah. Oh, I love Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah, no,
There's a really
she's
good
fantastic.
documentary about her too. It's called
Yes,
like
there is.
The Sound of My
There
Voice,
is.
I think it's called. It's really great. She's
Yes.
awesome.
So you're born and reared in Montana, Missoula, right?
I
And
am. Yep.
when did music become your passion and your focal point?
I was always kind of around music, but not really in a performance way. Like, neither of my parents are particularly musical. My mom taught piano lessons, so she started us on piano lessons when I was very young. But it was never really something that I was like, oh, I like want to be a performer until I was about 14. But in talking to my sister recently, my older sister, I didn't realize this or really remember it, but I guess when I was a kid, I was always like singing and performing for people. So maybe it was always subconsciously there. But I started playing open mics at Sean Kelly's, which is now the Thomas Meagher Bar, I think.
Thomas
Yeah,
Meagher.
Thomas Mar Bar.
Yeah, the Mar Bar. When I was 14 was my first one.
Isn't that ironic? It's pronounced the same way as your new music partner, Niall Bar.
Yeah, the Mar Bar. That's funny.
Mar
I
Bar, now
hadn't
you're on
really
the
thought
Mar
about that.
Band.
Full circle. I hadn't really thought of that. That's funny. But yeah, I started doing that, and then I don't really know what possessed me to start busking at the farmers market, but one Saturday I just took my guitar down there and started playing and made a tiny bit of money, and I had fun doing it. So I started doing it every Saturday, and it was a really good way to practice. And then I had a friend start doing it with me, and then we formed a band in high school and played all around town, played weddings. We played the Wilma for like a high school singing competition a few
What
times.
was the name of that band?
It was called Baby and Bukowski.
Baby and Bukowski.
Another
That's
very silly
Starsky and
band
Hutch.
name. Yeah,
That's Starsky and Hutch. Baby and
basically.
Bukowski.
But yeah, we did a couple. We did one kind of full length record on a split with a band from Townsend, Montana, as part of one. The other high schools in town had to do senior projects. The school that I
Right.
went to didn't have to, but it was part of someone's senior project. He was like
Right.
trying. He was like a budding producer, and we got hooked up with him through the flagship coordinator, who is still a good friend of mine. His name's Scott Matthews. So I guess I'm just surrounded by very supportive Scots in my
Oh,
life.
good. Scotsman,
But,
Scotsman.
yeah.
So you can play guitar, I know, and keyboard. Do you play other instruments also?
I used to play saxophone, but I think that my talent begins and ends at keys and guitar pretty much. Yeah, so I've just been doing it ever since then, and I often joke that my career has basically been like that game where you
And I
like,
have a,
well, what's up?
no, I was gonna say, performing is a talent in and of itself, but certainly songwriting is a talent that you really developed. How did that start?
I just started doing it, and I can still remember the first song I ever wrote when I was in 5th grade, I guess. So I guess my music journey started way earlier than I like associated in my brain, but I had a few neighborhood kids, and we decided to start a band, quote unquote. And we had one of our bandmates had a drum kit in his basement, and we would all just go down there and like bang on it and then pretend to play guitar. And yeah, I can that was the first time. And then I didn't really work on music seriously from then until high school. I was kind of a jock for a very long time, which is very funny. Now that I think of
And
it,
your sport
my
was,
life would be very different if I hadn't gotten injured in a soccer game when
so
I
you're a
was
soccer jock,
14.
right? That
Yeah.
was your sport.
Yeah, that was my sport.
So I've listened to you, some of your music that's on, in the media, and I would describe you. If somebody said, "What does Kaylin sound like? What kind of sound does she have?" This is I would think when I listened to you, I thought of Grimes. I thought a little bit of Bjork. Sarah McLachlan, do you have a role model in the music industry that you aspire to, kind of be like?
I mean, there's so many. I have like, I would, I obsession sounds creepy, but I really
All
enjoy
right.
it, like, music as a whole, performing it, writing it, whatnot.
Right.
Like, also just learning like the history of it and like paying attention to what people have already done and, you know, learning about it. And so I was like, I really love Patti Smith. You know, I would say as far as like someone I would like to get as good as at songwriting, I really love Paul Westerberg and the Replacements. Those are like like the top tier of songwriting to me. I think that they're just so great. You know, but like there's so many like Susie Sue and Stevie Nicks and like Sparks and like all of these bands that have been doing the thing that I love to do for so long and just watching how they evolved over their careers and like learning what mistakes they made and like, you know, just
you also have a knack for social media. I understand that you did a haircut video that had a million views.
I mean, I don't know how much I had to do with that other than just posting it.
Hey, posting it is enough. You did it. And I mean, a million views is substantial. You know, only one out of 100, maybe one out of 1,000 postings get that kind of following.
Yeah, it was.
You must have a knack with social media and figuring out how to use it.
I mean, I definitely grew up like online. You know what I mean? So it's not so much as that I know how to use it, it's just that I've just been doing it for so long. Just I do it the way that I do it, and it just seems to work. But
you have a pretty good Spotify, you know, monthly listeners. I mean, they're anxious to listen to your
music. That's actually a funny story. The reason that my Spotify listeners is so high, I'd like to believe it's purely because I posted that music. That's not the case. Rob Thomas from Matchbook 20, he posted one of my songs. He like the way that he uses social media is he just posts Spotify links like once a day on Twitter, Facebook.
And he put you in one of his Spotify lists.
And somehow he found one of my songs and he put it in his Instagram story. And I woke up the next day and I checked my, you know, message requests or whatever. And the way that Instagram works is once the story has expired, you can't see what it was if you didn't open the message in time.
Right.
So I just had an empty message request from Rob Thomas, and I was like, what is this? And so I scoured the internet, found out that he had posted one of my songs, and then that was July of 2021. I have so had less than 30,000 monthly listeners since then. So thank you, Rob Thomas. Shout out to Rob Thomas.
Right. I'm not a musician and I'm not building a big following, but Scott knows this. A year or so ago, I was in London and saw Jodie Comer in a play. Mm-hmm. You know, she's very popular. She was on, you know, Killing Eve on TV. And evidently, I wasn't aware of this, but she has a huge following just because her feet are large, believe it or not. And I took a picture because I was at opening night of her show, and I took a picture of her sitting on a piano, and she happened to have kicked her shoes off, so her feet were in it, and I got like 15,000 clicks and people sending me private messages thanking me for putting Jodie Comer's feet.
That's a side of the internet that's very strange. And
it is strange, but it just shows the power of, you know, something just accidentally happens like that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's 98% of the internet is stuff accidentally happening.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, just
look at those gunboats. Right.
Yeah. So let me fast forward a little bit. You're a Missoula, you know, artist. You're working, you're doing some radio stuff, you're doing, you know, concerts, you're writing music, you're doing Stone Pony. How did Niall Marr come into your life?
You know, it's funny. I didn't even know that he followed me on Instagram. Like,
another social media thing.
Yeah,
right?
Very funny. But yeah, I had put out this EP called Used To, which was, you know, four songs that I had flown to Massachusetts and recorded with Alan Day. And it was that
True Grit and Graceland on? Was True Grit on that?
Yeah. That was that EP. And, you know, that was the first project I had ever really like fully funded by myself, you know, gone out on a limb and kind of like, you know, invested in a very long time. I think, you know, I was 24. I had just turned 25 when I recorded it because my birthday happened while I was at the studio. But anyway, about a year went by. I hadn't really like planned any sort of release. And I just like kind of, you know, in February of 2020, very bad timing. I just kind of like put it out and was like, okay, I'll figure out a tour. I'll do something, you know, like I'm just going to put it online. And I put it online and not really anything happened. And then very soon after, you know, the world shut down. So, you know, it was just kind of, I really didn't expect anything to come of it. And one day, like, I don't know, 8 months after, I don't actually remember when it was, but I noticed that I had been tagged in somebody's post about like a playlist that used to had been put on. And I clicked on it and I was like, Niall Marr, who is this? And then I looked closer and I was like, there's no way this is the Marr that I think that it is. And then I scrolled through a thing and I was like, oh, this is one of the Marrs that I think that it is. And then I realized that he followed me and I just like messaged him and we kind of like kicked up a friendship. And
you and he are the same age, aren't you? Ironically, right?
He's a couple years older than me. I'm 29 and he's 31.
Yeah, so you're in the same groove pretty much.
Yeah, very, very close. I think he and my sister are the same age. So yeah, very, very similarly aged. But yeah, we just kind of in 2020, we just became kind of internet friends. And, you know, making friends on the internet has never been a foreign thing to me. I met my best friend in the whole world on a site called Tumblr when I was 15.
What does what does it mean to meet somebody on your best friend online? It's such a
you just
a
like connect online and then you just connect online. There's no other way we ever would have crossed paths, you know, my friend and I, Naran. But like, you know, we met online and then we just realized that like we were friends and it just kind of
and then when
from-
you met her for that for the first time physically, it was like it was that and then and more, correct? Like you're like,
yeah,
oh, everything's
we've been
confirmed.
Best friends ever since. The first time we met, we followed each other online when we were 15, and then we met for the first time when we were 19.
Uh-huh. Where does she live? Where does
she lives in Philadelphia, but she's originally
Philly. From yeah.
But
you remember Scott when you were a kid? I know when I was a kid, they used to have pen pals. You used to write somebody in a foreign country,
yeah,
and write you back and. You know, sometimes people would go and stay with, you know, you go visit them. You'd have to wait like 3 weeks to get a letter or 4 weeks to get a letter back. It's a lot slower in those days.
Yeah, it's kind of like pen pals for sure. But it was kind of the same thing with Niall. It was just kind of like we met online as much as you can meet online.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just kind of hit it off. And I was like, oh, yeah, me and this person are going to be friends. It's, you know, we get
now
along.
Now it's moving on friendship. You're going to be in a band together, Cher, and you're going to be writing songs with each other. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, we've been doing that for so Cher.
Wait, take a step. I want to take a step before we get into that. I want to take a quick step back. So okay. let's tell this story, right? So you meet him online. He follows you. You guys connect, and then what did you start to exchange? Just information. I'm a songwriter. I perform. Like, how did that develop?
I knew that he was musical and I knew that and he knew that I was musical because he had added my song playlist and there was a mutual respect there. And when in 2021, I really, because of the pandemic and for a lot of reasons, I just like was very close to giving up on music. I think a lot of people were.
I remember this.
It was just very bizarre to watch the industry that you had been working in for so long just disappear overnight. And, you know, in Missoula, I didn't really have people I was working with, you know, so it was just kind of like I felt very isolated. It felt pointless to like work on things because I was like, well, what am I going to do? Put it out and then nothing happens. I don't know. You know, I was just feeling very defeated.
And having
and so
worked
I,
with
I
and
hadn't
having worked.
Been...
I was going to say, having worked with you, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but having worked with you during that time when we were doing our radio show, everything was very closed. Everything was very inside and insular. And at one point, I'll remind you that you were like, hey, I think I'm going to go to California and I'm going to try my hat at doing brand marketing.
I think that was later, though. That
was that later?
That was later. So, yeah. Basically, in 2021, I just had kind of given up on the idea of being a musician.
Got it.
I wasn't really working on anything, but every few months or so, Niall would check in and he would just be like, hey, what are you working on? Hey, you should be writing. Hey, like, how's that new guitar? You know, like he would just kind of like pop in and be like, you know, supportive. And I would always just be like, oh, that's really nice. Like, it's really nice to have someone be genuinely like, hey, you should be doing this thing, you know, that you're very good at, like, you know. And then there was a time where I was like, yeah, I'm going to move away from Missoula. I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to, you know, try to do something different because I just felt very stuck here. And then, you know, I was thinking about that for a long time. And then May of 2022, Niall just sent me a song and he was like, hey, I wrote this song specifically for you to finish. So you got to finish it. And I was like, ugh, okay. And I hadn't done anything in so long, but it was like, okay, this is the spark I need. I'm going to do it because he took the time to do this. Like, I'm going to actually do it. And so, you know, I sent it back to him. He sent me a new mix. And then I, a few days later, started working on a song that I had been messing around with. And I recorded it in my room and I sent it to him. And then he cleaned it up in his studio and finished it and sent it back to me. And when I heard it, I showed it to my roommate and like just started crying because I was like, oh my God, I can do this again. Like, I found someone I can make music with again. Like, this is it.
That's amazing. Did he do that with anybody else though, Kaylin? Sorry to interrupt, but did he do that with anyone else? Was that kind of how he was getting through the pandemic?
He's worked with a lot of people. But I think it was like, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I feel like we were kind of on the same page with like, both of us were just like, oh wow, this works really well. Like, let's just keep doing this.
Yeah.
And so we just kept sending stuff back and forth all summer. And by the end of the summer, you know, or even by the end of July, like we started in May. And by the end of July, I was like, yo, do you want to do this for real? And he was like, you can come live in Manchester. We can work at the studio every day. And I was like, bet, let's go. And so I had never had a passport. I had never left the country. So I like went and applied for a passport and it magically showed up in 2 weeks. I don't know how it happened. It was supposed to take until like October and it showed up in 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, that's a good sign. And then I gave up my apartment I had lived in for 3 years and sold all my stuff and moved to Manchester. And we just were in the studio like pretty much all day, every day.
And that was October of 22, right? October of 22 or November?
My last month in Missoula was October. I got to Manchester on November 7th, but I was out of my apartment on Halloween.
Amazing. Isn't it an amazing story, Arnie?
Yes. And here's what I'm thinking about as I'm listening to all of this. It's hard to have a partnership, particularly musically, because you write, he writes.
Mm-hmm.
You sing, he sings.
Right.
You play instruments, he plays instruments. So how do you come to an agreement about how you're going to mesh together in a band?
I feel like it was just kind of a thing where we both just did a thing that the other one didn't do. Right. Like, Niall's strength is guitar, obviously. I can fake my way through guitar playing, but I am in no way
a
ripper. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, yeah, naturally, he's going to be good at guitar. So, like, he's really good at arrangements. He's really good at production. He's really good at melodies and instrumentation and, like, you know, music direction. And that's never been something that I've been particularly well-versed in. The thing that I'm really strong at is writing, like lyrics. And he doesn't really, he said to me several times, he doesn't listen to lyrics when he listens to songs. He's only listening to melodies, which I think is so bizarre. But it was just another thing where it just magically worked. It was like 50-50. It was like, he did the thing that I don't do, and I did the thing that he doesn't do. And put them together and it just works.
Well, it reminds me a little bit like of Bernie Taupin and Elton John. You know, Bernie wrote all the words and Elton did the music.
Yeah.
You know,
all the songs. That was a perfect partnership.
Yeah.
So are you contemplating a band that, you know, is Cher going to be touring and performing live and all of that?
That's the plan. When we get back our first.
And when are you going back?
I get back to Manchester September 25th.
And we are recording this on the 5th of September, just for context purposes. So about 20 days from now, 3 weeks from now.
Which is so soon. Oh, my God. It's crazy. I've been back since March and it just flew by. But when I get back, we're going to like put together a band and I have to leave the country for a few days to apply for the kind of visa where I can like play shows where money will be involved.
Right.
But once we do that, we'll just start playing some shows.
For our audience, how does something like that, you know, we're putting the band together. How does the finances of all that work?
At this point, it's very much by the seat of our pants. Luckily, right. Niall and his wife like own their flat, and they are very gracious to let me stay there exchange for like very minimal, like doable work on my end. So, like, you know, I'm very lucky in that way that the housing part is taken care of, because otherwise I just don't think we could do it, because with the way the visa works, I'm not allowed to work for 6 months over there. I can be there for 6 months, but I can't be working or earning money. Right. So basically what I did the first time was I sold everything that I owned and then just lived off of that money. And now I worked as a tour manager for 2 months this summer, and then selling clothes, doing random gig work. I'm dog sitting right now, just like saving up enough money to live for 6 months. And then after that, I don't really know what will happen, but you know.
Kayla needs a GoFundMe page.
I don't need a GoFundMe, but you know, if there's any rich benefactors out there that want to.
Right. She's very, she's
all the money.
Well, you know, but Scott, it's not cheap to put a band together and, you know, and hire other musicians.
It's very much not cheap.
You know, and you gotta get gigs, you know, locked in, and you have to, I mean, it is a lot
of work. I think a lot of people don't understand how much work it actually is. You know, I think people just see like, you know, a good show being put on, but they don't see how many people get involved in that.
Right. It's a business. But let's rewind a little bit before we go further. So Kaylin makes this move, decides to go over to the UK, to Manchester in October/November of 22. When she started talking to me about this, because we were doing a weekly radio show, I said to her, are you sure you know what you're doing here? Do you know who this person is? Do you have an idea of how this is all going to work financially? And
he was the voice of reason.
Yeah, the expectations.
Well, Daddy Scott Richmond, he's gone through
my pretend dad,
three sons, so he knows.
Well, no, I was really concerned, but then I was like, at some point Kaylin just said, I'm doing this and I think it's going to be good. And I go, you know what, if you feel that way, I feel that way. So henceforth, what's that line from I forget who the artist is, but Jim Carroll. I looked and then I jumped and then looked, right? Like you kind of jumped and then looked.
And that's how most of my music career has been. So it's like, you know,
follow your instincts.
It's genuine. It's generally worked out for me so far. So I'm like, I'm not going to question it. But yeah, I was very aware that it was a 50-50. You know, it could have gone one of two ways, because before I moved over there, I had never met him in real life. I had never met his wife in real life. You know, we had all interacted online, but
his father or his mother.
Yeah. Like I didn't know what I was walking into, but I had a gut feeling that they were like good, trustworthy people. And like, you know, we got along so well before that. I really didn't have any reservations about it. I think my family thought I was clinically insane.
Right.
So, like,
right.
My home and sell all my stuff, which I understand. It sounds crazy, but to me,
right. Let me ask you a quick question, though. So, yeah, it wasn't crazy, but, you know, here's the thing. So explain, you get over there the early November of 22. How do you develop because this is the thing, I don't know if we were even communicating then. How did you develop like a work schedule? Like what did you just start like the day you got there, the day after you got there? And what was the routine? And what did you do when you weren't doing music?
I was very jet lagged for about a week.
Got it.
But we, you know, the first week or so, I was just kind of like easing in to being in a new country. Niall showed me around, like we went and saw his dad's studio and like I met his friends. We all went out to dinner. We like the first thing that I did when I got there, he picked me up from the airport at like 6 a.m. I had done an overnight flight, so I was just and I hadn't slept at all. So I was just like very out of it. But I was like, I have to stay awake all day. So we just did stuff all day. He like walked me around Manchester. We went and saw this dude, like his studio. We like went to Tesco and got snacks. And like that night we went and saw Sigur Rós at the O2 Apollo. And like, I remember being so jet lagged at the Sigur Rós show. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. But I want to go to sleep so bad. But yeah, I mean, really the work schedule came very naturally. You know, we just like we would wake up, we would have breakfast. Niall does jujitsu, so if he went to the gym, I would just kind of like read or like do whatever until he got back. And then about 11,
Right.
we would walk over the studio and work from like 11 to 7, 11 to 6, 11 to 7. Come back, make dinner, watch a music documentary, and go to bed, and then do it again in the morning. That
But
was
then you
cool,
did,
man.
and you
In that environment, Kaylin, can you develop your own friends? I mean, it would be hard in a weird way because you're in this sphere of influence. You're living in this house. You work at the studio. You're around the wife and all that. Is there a way to have your own private?
You know, last time I didn't really do anything outside of the bubble just because it was all very new to me. But luckily, like, I really love Niall's group of friends. Everyone was super welcoming and very cool. And, you know, I didn't really have that much time that we weren't working on stuff. I started running, and I tried a kickboxing class, which I was very bad at.
Cool.
But yeah, like my thing that I would do on my own was I would just run like 4 miles down by the canals, like a few times a week. And then,
sure.
You know,
clear your
let me
head.
Ask you this. You're a Montana born and bred person. You are now in Manchester, the UK.
It's very different.
Well, yeah,
there's
I was
like
going to say.
No nature to be found.
Well, how did you adjust? And did people think you really were a cowgirl, right? You rode horses and you were living the Yellowstone life?
I think it was the first time I've ever been a novelty ever in my whole life.
I was going to say, you had to be.
It was very funny to me because everyone around me, like with the accents and like everything and the mannerism, like it was like everyone was a novelty to me, but I was also a novelty to them.
Sure.
At the beginning, because like it is like, you know, out of all of the European countries, obviously England, you know, is the most similar to the US, I would say.
But there's a lot of
still
differences.
Still very different. It is still very different.
We don't cut hamburgers with forks and knives, you know, knives and forks in Montana, but they do there.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. But it was cool. And like, you know, I've spiritually taken on being an honorary Manc, like a person from Manchester.
Are you
know?
Eating
so
bangers?
Like,
are you having bangers and mash for breakfast?
Bangers and mash, no, but I have
you're a vegetarian.
Had a good vegetarian fry up a few times. Yeah,
well, fry up.
There's great Indian restaurants there too.
So oh yeah, the Indian food incomparable.
It's
so
really good.
Good. So
it
good.
Is.
There's this
good.
Great falafel place that we get. You can get a falafel sandwich for £2. So great.
So what was it? I was going to say real quickly, Arnie. So being the object of like you're an exotic person coming to their world and they were like observing you, asking questions and very welcoming, which is a nice feeling. So what do you anticipate this next visit? Because now you're far more familiar. They know who you are. They know who your amazing talent. Is it now like, hey, let's not just finish up this project, but let's take this out on the road and let's perform it.
Yeah,
in
I
front
think
of
it's gonna
audiences.
Be- As much as we were very much in work mode last time, I think it's going to be like pedal to the metal. It's time to go kind of work mode when I get back. That's kind of the plan because, you know, the whole 6 months on, 6 months off thing is not super sustainable. So it's like we got to make the most of the time while we have it. And last time there was a lot of like, you know, days where we would just go on like excursions instead of like going to the studio or whatever. But I feel like this time we're going to be very...
How much material do you need in the can, so to speak, before you're ready to take the show on the road?
Well, we have a full EP and an album mostly recorded right now, as well as the single, and then a handful of just songs that we haven't finished yet. So we do have a lot of material. Excuse me. I think it's going to be more a matter of like getting the band together and figuring out like sound and music direction and that sort of thing. So yeah, I think it'll be a different kind of work.
Did the collaboration steer your lyrics in a different way? I mean, before you have been described as having confessional lyrics or that, you know, introspective kind of, you know, lyrics that were based on your experiences being in Montana. You're now, you know, mixed in with your Manc. You have these new experiences.
Yeah.
Has that changed your way of writing?
It really has. You know, it's like this record we've been working on, a lot of the songs, they do have like autobiographical aspects of them, but a lot of them are inspired by like movies, which has been an interesting like you know, departure from how I usually write. Like a few of the songs are just written based on like scenes of movies that I've watched, because I watch a lot of movies. Like that's the other thing that I really love besides music. But like, yeah, the first song on the album is based off of a scene from that John Cusack movie, High Fidelity, where he's standing.
I love High Fidelity. It's one of my favorite movies. Yeah. I've seen it 20 times, probably.
Yeah, it. It's that scene where he's standing in the rain outside of Charlie's apartment, and he's like, yeah. Charlie, you bitch! Like,
let's work it out!
Like, I wrote an entire song just about that scene, you know? So it's like, it's definitely, I think, getting out, like, when you have a project that's like your project, it is a lot of pressure on you to like, I don't know, to do everything. And I think having someone else involved has really let me not have to put that pressure on so hard. And because of that, I've been able to write in a much more interesting way, I think.
Did you have any areas of disagreement? Because once you do collaborate with someone, you may have a different vision than that person. And it's really a give and take.
The times that we've quote unquote disagreed on anything have been so few that it's like, it's like, I wouldn't even call it disagreement, but like sometimes he'll want to cut a line from like arrangement wise, he'll want to cut like a line from the lyrics and I'll be like, no, that's a load bearing line. It leads into the rest of it. We have to have it. And he'll be like, but it's too many. Like, I don't know, because he doesn't care about the lyrics. When he does arrangement stuff, he doesn't think about the words. Like how they lead into each other.
Right, he's thinking about
it. And I'm very much like, this won't make sense if you do it this way, you know? So that's mostly it, you know? It's like arrangement things, but I would
say that's okay. That's good. That's good.
No, it's healthy. And it makes like, and the times that I've been right and the times that he's been right, it's like, you know, it makes things better. So
do you think the quality of your product now that you've produced these songs is better than, is the collaboration producing better songs?
I definitely think so. I definitely think so. I think it's like definitely greater than the sum of its parts. You know what I mean? So
the
gestalt
of it all.
We've both done things that we've both done cool shit on our sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this podcast. We've both done cool stuff on our own, but I think what we're doing together is way cooler, you know?
How did you come up with the name? By the way, how did you come up with the name Cher?
So in like 2017, I had been joking with a friend, because one thing that you do as a musician is like, I feel like most people will say that this is something they do as a musician, is if they hear someone make a remark or like some joke happens or someone's doing a bit and they hear something, they'll be like, oh, that's a good band name. And so I think most people I know have a running list of just funny band names like in their phone. And in 2017, I had the idea. I was like, oh, you know what would be funny is if you named a band Cher, so every time you said it out loud, people thought you were talking about Cher, C-H-E-R.
Right.
But then it's spelled Cher. And I liked the idea so much at the time that I made a Bandcamp page for Cher in 2017 just to have the URL. So like, if I ever decided to use it, it was there. And then, you know, we were coming up with a name for this project, and originally I proposed calling it Iona after this character from Pretty in Pink. The record shop owner's name is Iona. And I always just thought, like, you know, and like one word band names were super cool, but Niall wasn't super into it, but he was like, yeah, like we can think about it. Like that is pretty cool, whatever. But then there was an Irish band called Iona. So we were like, okay, back to the drawing board. And I hadn't thought about it in years, but then I remembered Cher and I was like, this is either the funniest or the dumbest thing I've ever come up with. But what do you think about calling the band this? And he was just like immediately like, yes, that's the band name.
He got so, it.
Scott, did you ever have a band name that you came up with that was thought if you ever were in a band, it'd be a great name for a band?
Yeah, of course. Mine was Bill's Toupee.
Bill's Toupee?
Sounds like it could have been his hair or it could have been. Fan.
Mine was Plastic Dreams.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, okay. I like that too. It's like Steely Dan.
All right. Nice.
By the way,
the name of a song. I think there actually is a song called Plastic Dreams. But my name of the band preceded the song. Of the song.
By the way, knowing Kaylin the way I know Kaylin, she's an old soul, right? So she's 29 years old, but we always joke that she was born three decades early or too late,
already,
actually.
You know, listening to High Fidelity, it's a totally different thing, right? I mean, that's a pre-29-year-old movie.
I was going to say, did you find that Niall was also had a, you know, first of all, when Niall's not working with Cher and not doing his own thing, he also performs, right, with Hans Zimmer?
Yeah, so he tours with Hans Zimmer's band as the guitar player. So he does the stadium tours that they do in Europe. That's his job for most of the year.
So playing in front of 40, 50,000 people for him is no biggie.
Yeah, it's insane, actually. Like, sometimes I forget that that's his job, and then, like, they'll tag him in something on Instagram, and I'll go look at it, and I'll be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, there's the Acropolis.
I forgot, like you do real big kid music stuff.
Like, well, one of the things that you probably know now from spending time in Europe, there's a much bigger focus in Europe on attending live performances than the U.S. U.S., I mean, obviously, Taylor Swift can sell out a house, or, you know, there are 5 or 10 people that could. But in Europe, you can get 40,000 people for 100 different groups.
Yeah,
people
it's
are
wild.
Really into music.
It's the culture there is definitely a lot more geared towards music, which is cool to be around too, because it's like there's a ton of stuff happening in the music scene in Manchester, just in Manchester.
Yes. Right.
Like, then there's London, and you can get anywhere, but everyone will show up to a show on like a Tuesday, you know? It's cool.
I'm gonna be in London in October, and I went online and said, you know, concerts in London in October, and there's like 100 of them. I mean, it's like even more than New York, Scott. There's more live performances, in bigger venues in London than there is in New York.
Yes. I think I mentioned to you, Kaylin, when you were going over there, having worked there in the music business of the 90s and the 2000s, they love music more than we do and appreciate it more. Yeah. And it makes you feel like you're understood, right? When you went there, it's like, oh, they get me. They get what I'm all about. Isn't that a great feeling?
It was a really good feeling. And like, as different as it was, I did feel like it was a good fit for me to be there, you know, like the culture of it all and just like, you know, the people I was around. I the second I got there, I was like, this was the right choice. If I could have done this 10 years ago, I would have done it, you know, but.
Right. It's a long way from, what is it? The 4-H club or whatever FFF, FFA, Future Farmers of America.
A long way from busking on the Saturday market.
Yeah.
Let's do this, guys. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Kaylin Krebsbach. She is headed back to the UK next month or later this month, and she is joining Arnie and I on our show. Back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Kaylin Krebsbach.
So now everybody that's listening, and Scott and I as well, want to know when we can hear this music, what's going to happen now, how do we track you down, you know.
What's the name of the single?
What's the name of the single, and can we play it at the end of this show?
Definitely.
Will you give us the privilege of putting it on?
I would love that. Yeah, so our first single comes out September 15th. It's a cover of the song by the Psychedelic Furs, Love My Way, which is one of my favorite songs.
Great singer.
Yeah, so that comes out on September 15th on all the streaming platforms. We'll have it on our Bandcamp. But if you want to keep up with what we're doing, our Instagram is instagram.com/thatbandshare, all one word.
S-H-A-R-E.
S-H-A-R-E.
Yes, S-H-A-R-E.
And plus, they can find other music of yours on Spotify and other platforms, right?
Yeah, so. Niall and I both have our individual music on Spotify and everything. My project is called Wilma Laverne Minor, as we said earlier.
Yes.
And you can find Niall stuff just under Niall Marr.
Plus, if anybody wants to hear a really great cover of Graceland, I listened to yours the other day, and I really liked your interpretation.
Oh, man, is that on YouTube?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yep. You sounded, it was a great.
Was that when I had a shaved head? I feel like, that, oh God, that's 10 years old. That's so
I know, but it was still a great take.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I did a deep dive to listen to everything that you had out there so I could get a sense of who you were.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And this is good. This is, you know, Kaylin, promise me this. When you get over to the UK and you start to kind of work your way through things, that you give us a shout back, and maybe we'll do a episode two of kind of where Cher is at the time. Like, where in the world is Cher?
Where in the world is Cher?
Right. We should do that, because I think that this is an important story, I think, certainly for our audience, but I think it's for a lot of young musicians. And I know a lot of young musicians. How do you become, how do you, you know, really establish yourself, and how do you build a career? Well, while there's no conventional this is how to, this path that Kaylin chose, or has followed, I should say, is just so inventive and full of opportunity and full of great things. And let's all just, you know, be in her corner and let's see how she takes it, you know, moves it forward. So absolutely. I'm excited for that.
Yes. Sounds like a winner to me.
So yeah. Let's front announce the song. What are we going to hear now?
All right. You're going to hear the first single from Cher, Love My Way.
Kisses not enough. Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.